Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My guest today is Len. Len, thank you for joining me.
Yo, what's up? Highlight your boy. This is Len, a.k.a. the Bat Tribble of Black Tribble's fame. Thank you, Scott. Thanks for inviting me.
You're welcome.
This is dope.
Yes, and then you can hear Len has a voice for radio.
Oh, really?
Also, he has a radio show here with some of his friends. And I think the previous episode, if you listen, Kennedy was on, and she was a compatriot, a fellow Black Tribble.
Yes, Kennedy is the Storm Tribble of Black Tribble's fame. Our show, Black Tribbles, airs as a radio show on WPPM LP 106.5. FM on your Philadelphia and Camden dial, and is also available as a podcast on blacktribbles.com, iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher Radio, and any place you want to get your podcast.
Check the internet.
Interwebs, and you shall find the Black Tribbles.
That's right. Now, Bat Tribble leads me to believe that perhaps you enjoy Batman.
I am a Batman head. I will let you see that I have a...
Oh, look at that.
A mock Calvin and Hobbes t-shirt on. That has been turned into Batman and Robin. I love Batman.
And you have a Batman emblem. I have a Batman emblem on my necklace.
Yeah. I just grew up on Batman. Mm-hmm. And when you become a Black Tribble, and all of our fans and our guests, they become one with our Tribble Nation. Mm-hmm. And they take on a Tribble designation that indicates where their geek is. That's why I'm Bat Tribble. Mm-hmm. Kennedy is Storm Tribble because of Storm from the X-Men.
Sure.
Even though her first love actually is hard science fiction, but she just wouldn't allow anyone else to be predominant Black superheroine out there. Mm-hmm. No, I'll be Storm Tribble. So we've got Randy, he's Super Tribble. We got a Spider Tribble, who Jason Richardson, because he's a Spider-Man head. And then Eric is actually the Master Tribble, which is short for Jedi Master Tribble.
Ah.
Because he is a Star Wars devotee.
Well, you know, I will forgive him for preferring Star Wars over Star Trek.
Oh, man, he just recently went in. It's a shame to do this on this show, but he's watched Star Trek over the years, of course. But he realized that he hadn't watched a lot of the original series. Mm-hmm. So he just recently binged through the original series. He ripped it to shreds. He was like, man, that is like a bad show. I was like, what do you mean it's a bad show? He's like, no, it's a bad. No, it was. He had to watch the whole thing. He watched the first season.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like,
which is probably the best season.
Which is probably the best season. So if you didn't like the best first season, it's not for you.
Right.
It's not your cup of tea. And it apparently wasn't a cup of tea to this particular Jedi. He didn't like the Metachlorians in Star Trek, the original series.
He was like, where's the Jar Jar Binks?
I think if you asked him, he would say that there were more a few episodes. There were more than a few Jar Jar Binks running around, because he just did not enjoy it. He felt like the acting was bad.
Mm-hmm.
He has a really it really sticks in his craw. Captain Kirk's two-handed chop that really sticks in his craw. And when people, the space turbulence and how everybody has to move in threes on the space. Whoa! It bothered him.
What?
So
these are well, I do understand. It's a 50-year-old show.
That's what you have to remember.
So in context, I can understand. If you're looking at it at modern day television standards, it's not going to be super great. Although I think many of the stories still stand up. But
I think the stories and the allegories of the stories definitely stand up. Now, like if you're looking at the production values on some of them, especially in the last season, you know, then it's like it's a little iffy.
Yes.
But the stories do stand up. That being said, and maybe it is harder for science fiction, I just recently went back and watched a lot of The Twilight Zone.
Oh, yes.
Which is like great television.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the more science fiction ones, you could say the production values don't hold up either, but there's something about that you still buy into it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't know, and I wonder whether or not that is just that you just allow your mind to go with it because you know the basic premise of the show, or is it because The Twilight Zone is in black and white.
I was just about to say that.
And Star Trek, it's in color.
Mm-hmm. And so once you see the black and white, you kind of are like, okay, yeah, I can excuse a lot more because clearly this is ancient.
Exactly.
If only Star Trek were in black and white.
If only if it was, if we could, you know how they went back and they like redid the effects mm-hmm. on the original
they
series?
Should have taken out all the color.
Desaturated. Desaturated. If the original series was done like the Dick Van Dyke Show, mm-hmm. it would be one of the all-time classics. I mean, it's still one of the all-time classics. You know, but he might like it.
He might. But you know, that's okay. We welcome all fandom here on Random Trek. I like Star Wars. I like Star Trek better. But Star Wars is just fine with me.
Master Tribble is a Star Wars fan, so if he doesn't like Star Trek...
That's what I say. Well, let's get back to Trek. Let's get back to Trek. I was actually going to ask you a Batman question, and then we'll get back to Trek.
Okay, Phil.
Your favorite iteration of Batman? He's had a lot of iterations.
He's had a lot of iterations. Now, do you mean in
any medium that is film, comic books, TV?
Okay.
I'm guessing Adam West, but maybe not.
Not Adam West. I like Adam West. I do like Adam West. I like Adam West, but my favorite Batman 66 is not the TV show. My favorite Batman 66 is actually the comic book they've been doing for the last few years, mm-hmm. Batman 66, which I just think is like crazy bonkers. I just love it. But I think my favorite iteration mm-hmm. of Batman probably dates back to the mid 70s in the comics. There was a writer, Steve Englehart, and an artist, Marshall Rogers, with his inker Terry Austin. They did this monumental run of Batman. It's the one where one of the most classic Joker stories come back when Joker makes all the fish, turns the fish into like mean laughs. It's like called the killing fish. Mm. And it is a bunch of really cool issues that they did with Batman. And they explored Batman as a hero, as this Dark Knight detective, but someone that was still grappling at that time with being alone for the first time, because at that time, Robin had just gone off to college, as well as what that meant for Bruce Wayne to be alone, as well as Batman to be alone, mm-hmm. while still having to fight crime in this city. And then Batman falls in love with this woman, Silver St. Cloud, who... any real true Batman fan will say, outside of Catwoman, that is the love of his life. Okay. You know, not this Julie Madison stuff that they make up just because she was in the first freaking issue. No, it was Silver St. Cloud. That run is my favorite Batman, I think, because of Steve Englehart's writing. And it's probably a run of about 7 or 8 issues. And then mostly because of Marshall Rogers' artwork. He made Batman's cape come alive. And, it was just really, really beautiful. They tried to revisit that era, I guess maybe about now, it's about 10 years ago. They put the team back together and tried to revisit the era, and it wasn't the same.
It never is.
It never is. But that's my favorite iteration of Batman.
Now, I know you're a Batman fan first.
Yes.
But are you a Star Trek fan?
I am a Star Trek fan. Okay. I liked the original series when it came out. You mm-hmm. know, I was a lot younger. I like Next Generation. I've watched pretty much every episode of Star Trek there has been. I've mm-hmm. watched at least once. I'm all the way up through Enterprise.
Even Enterprise.
I was a fan of Enterprise. Oh, all right. You know, it had its warts, but I was a fan of it. And they did Enterprise wrong. They did them wrong. Let's say it now. So yeah, I'm a big Star Trek fan. Deep Space Nine, to me, is cut and above the best Star Trek series. I think it's the one that took the lessons of the first two series and kind of blended it with what was happening in storytelling at that time. Really, because Deep Space Nine is one of the first shows that I came across that had got into sequential storytelling, you know, mm-hmm. and had like overarching story going through like season upon season and yes. reaching back to look back at different scenes and how they all of a sudden are you know, feeding into stories two seasons later. And that all came about in my eyes. The first place I ever came across that was on Deep Space Nine. Mm-hmm. And it seemed like after Deep Space Nine, I saw it everywhere.
Yep.
You know, and I think the relationships on Deep Space Nine were a lot deeper. Mm-hmm. I think that everyone was allowed to have more of a varied personality. Mm-hmm. And I understand that that's because with Next Generation, you had Gene Roddenberry at the helm when the show was first few seasons. Mm-hmm. So you had him, and with all due respect to Gene Roddenberry, he had a particular, you know,
he had a very strong feeling about how Star Trek should be.
And, you know, it's like, no, conflict, fanschlick. Get the heck out of here.
Everybody in the future, everyone's happy.
Exactly. It's La La Land.
Which is I hope in the future everyone is happy. It's a wonderful thing to project as an image of the future.
Yes.
But as an entertainment product, watching people be happy for 44 minutes and not do anything, not all that exciting. The first couple of seasons of TNG, I think, bear that out.
Yeah.
But you're right. And then Deep Space Nine is basically like, let's take all the rules, quote unquote, of Star Trek, mm-hmm. just kind of throw them out.
Yeah.
And see what happens. Like, they don't go anywhere. They're not trekking anywhere.
Nope.
Until Worf comes along with his ship.
Very true. Very true.
And, you know, there are stars, obviously, but it talks about religion. You know, Sisko has a son and he's mm-hmm. there. Mm-hmm. We haven't really seen that before. I mean, I guess Beverly Crusher and Will, but he was just kind of hanging out. And he's in this episode that we're going to talk about at some point. We will talk about the episode.
Oh, yeah. We got an episode to talk about, ladies and gentlemen.
That's right. But yeah, I agree with you. Deep Space Nine and everyone who's listened to this podcast is sick of me saying this, but is the best Star Trek, period. I love TNG, though. Look, this is my segue. Because that's the Star Trek that I started with.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I think Star Trek and I think the Enterprise, I default to thinking of TNG characters and the Enterprise D and that big, you know, round saucer and everything.
Yeah.
This is my Star Trek, although I do think Deep Space Nine is better. And this episode is a perfect example of the episodic nature of Star Trek, TNG. Because, you know, this person, we meet a new alien race, somebody transforms into an energy being, Beverly kind of falls in love, but not really, maybe infatuation, probably a better word. And then we never speak of it again.
No.
It never happens.
No.
And the next episode after this is The Best of Both Worlds. So, you know, it's kind of like, I feel like the writers were like, not that this is a bad episode, but they were like, well, we need to get to Best of Both Worlds.
We're not at Best of Both Worlds yet? No, we're one short.
Exactly. Energy being. Because this is like the 18,000 energy being that we meet on Star Trek.
So
well-trodden territory.
Yes, very much.
But it doesn't mean it's a bad episode. It's just that as I was looking at the episode list, I was like, oh, the next one is Best of Both Worlds. Hard to compare to that one.
Mm-hmm.
Although that is one of those rare cases where we get in TNG something that happens, the best of both worlds, that is actually reverberates in the next seasons. Not as much as probably now in a modern show would do.
Most certainly.
But they do touch on it. And then, of course, it launches the best TNG film, First Contact. Everyone should agree that that is the best TNG film.
Yes. And if you don't, get out.
That's right, because watch the other ones, actually, and then you'll be like, well, maybe First Contact is the best one. So this episode is interesting. It features, I guess, there are two stories. Geordi LaForge trying to get a date is one storyline.
Trying to get some trim.
Yes. And then there is Dr. Crusher. They find this person who has crash-landed on this planet, and they kind of heal him and figure out what his deal is.
Right.
And kind of have to protect him from people, as we find out later. So let's talk about Geordi LaForge first, and then we can get into it. So it opens with Geordi and Worf. And I think Worf and Michael Dorn should get an award for playing Worf, because Worf is one of my favorite Star Trek characters. Even when he's not saying anything, Michael Dorn's reactions are just fantastic.
Yeah.
And there are lots of good examples in this very episode of that.
He's getting his comedy chops on in this episode.
He is. And so basically, Geordi, it's well known that Geordi is uncomfortable with the ladies.
Yes.
He's an awkward engineer. Mm-hmm. He's never had a lot of success, seemingly. Mm-hmm. Although he's a handsome guy and he's very smart, he just lacks self-confidence, I suppose, exactly. is the problem. And so we open in 10 forward, and there's a lady there that Geordi is interested in. And it struck me that Geordi has a very particular type, because this woman looks almost exactly like Leia Brahms, who is the woman he was infatuated with in several other episodes.
That's right.
And so, like, Geordi, you have a type. Nothing wrong with that. And so
he's a good type.
Yes, she's a lovely lady. She is clearly interested in him. He is clearly interested in her. So she stops by and she's like, "Hey, how are you, Geordi?" And he's like, "Oh, I'm fine." Exactly. And Worf is like, "What is wrong with you?"
Worf is just sitting there looking at him like, "Really?"
Yeah. They have this little interchange before that happens where he's like, "I don't know what to say to her. What should I do?" And Worf, of course, gives it. He's like, "Don't worry. The scent is the first thing." And then Geordi's like, "Okay, maybe you're not the best person for me to get advice from." And really, I mean, Geordi, who can he get advice from? His best friends are Worf, who's not going to give him good advice for human women, generally, and Data, who, you know, while he is fully functional, and he had a thing with Tasha Yar, not a man who is well-versed in relationships.
Very true.
Let's say. And not even a man, although a sentient being. So Geordi, he has no one to turn to. And so they set this up. They remind everyone that Geordi is a little lacking self-confidence. In fact, I think Geordi says that.
He does.
In case you miss it, he's like, "I don't have any self-confidence." And so you think, well, that's a weird way to open the show. And then they beam down to this planet that they come across. There's a guy who is unconscious and crash-landed. We don't know who he is.
Don't know who he is.
Or what he is.
No.
But Dr. Crusher, and this I want to get your take on this. So he's dying. Dr. Crusher is there. She wants to save him. She's a doctor. That's what she does. They can't transport him because he is unstable.
Yes.
His nervous system is freaking out.
Yeah, his brain stem is dislocated or something like that. Right.
They have never seen this kind of alien before.
No.
Dr. Crusher knows nothing about his physiology.
No.
But she thinks, well, his brain can't control his nervous system, so we need to fix that. Mm-hmm. So I need a volunteer, she says.
Yes. Yes.
Without even explaining what, if Geordi, being the good Starfleet officer he is, says, "I volunteer."
Well, see, you got to look at who went down there. It was Crusher, Data, Riker, Geordi.
Yep.
She needs a volunteer. Data, I can't.
He would, but I can't do it. System.
Riker ain't got no time for nobody. I'm here to lead.
That's right.
I'm here to lead, lean, look good.
That's right.
That's what I'm here for.
Sit down in a chair weirdly.
I think if you rewind this episode in super slow motion, when she says, "I need a volunteer," I think you see Riker push Geordi forward.
He's just like, "You are the
volunteer." He's just like, He's like, "Yeah, sure, whatever.
We've got Geordi."
You know, what do you think you're here for? Get your blind butt down there.
And so he does very quickly. And then this is where Dr. Crusher explains that she's going to put these I don't even know what they are, devices on both of their foreheads. And his brain, Geordi's brain, is going to take over for this alien they've never met. They don't know anything about. He's going to take over for his nervous system. Mm-hmm. This strikes me as a horrible idea.
Yes, very much so. You don't know this person. You don't know these aliens. You don't know the physiology. You don't know anything about what's going on. Like, we all know, I mean, with Geordi, you've gotten on this visor, which is doing something to his brain anyway because it's helping him to see. So you don't know how that's going to mess up with the mechanism that you're putting on his head, that you're putting on this guy's head.
Seems like a bad idea, Dr. Crusher.
Pretty much.
Yeah, I'm no space doctor. But this seems like a bad idea. But she wants to save this dude. And so they do it. And she says to Geordi, "If you feel weird, let me know." And then she does it. And now it's unclear to me if, because we find out later this guy's basically like coming out of his chrysalis and emerging as an energy being. And so we see this beam of energy come from the alien's head into Geordi's head. Pew! Exactly. Now, it is unclear to me if nobody else saw that in the landing party.
Yeah, or did they just see Geordi's reaction?
Right.
Yeah, I'm not sure either.
Because I feel like if you saw that, you would think, we have to stop this.
That's not right.
That's right. Geordi is alive. This person's dying, which is sad. And we want to save him as well as we can. But, you know, you have to prioritize as a doctor. Hey. It's just the thing you have to do. But then Geordi says, no, no. Because he startles and he says something, right? And he says, no, I'm fine. And Dr. Crusher's like, okay. And so now as a viewer, you think, something is going to happen. And Geordi is going to be a key component of this story.
Yes, you do, don't you?
And then you get to the end of the episode, and that is not true.
No, not at all.
It's so weird.
Not only does Geordi not really, is he germane to the main plot of the story, but what you get at the end, if you peep this, I mean, because I'm assuming everybody listening to this have seen the episode.
I don't think I even said what episode we're talking about, which I usually do. So this is Transfigurations, which is season 3. I'm doing this a little backwards, people. Season 3, episode 25. But the title of the podcast is the episode we're talking about. So it'll be fine.
Hey, so catch up. So at the end of the episode, or near the end of the episode, the alien Crusher and Picard and a bunch of people, they're coming out of his ready room.
Mm-hmm.
And you see they're all leaving the ready room. And then you see Picard, Crusher, the alien come out of the ready room. And Geordi walks up to the alien to thank him. Cause I don't know what happened, but ever since I helped you come from the planet, I've never felt better. Mm-hmm. And he said, the alien says, you know, something about, I think we just unlocked something that was
already inside
you. Mm-hmm. I'm willing to bet that scene was added on.
When they realized they didn't
they
do
realized
anything.
That they had not done anything. Not only had they not done, they hadn't summed up anything that had to do with Geordi. Because basically the rest of the show, as far as Geordi is, Geordi's just getting a girl.
Well, yeah, and I guess that what we leave from that, there are a couple scenes where Geordi's like, I feel great, and he has more confidence, and then he talks to the girl, and that's really it. That's what he gets, a superpower of a tiny bit more self-confidence.
Exactly. That's what shot into him.
Yep.
Confidence.
Mm-hmm. It seemed weird.
And it really seems weird, especially, this is a little bit of a spoiler. When they're coming out of Captain Picard's ready room, they're coming out of the scene where Captain Picard is admonishing the alien for almost killing somebody in the crew.
Right.
So Captain Picard is like, he's pissed.
Right, as well he should be. So he kills and resurrects Worf.
Yes. And now, admittedly, Geordi knows that he killed the rest because Geordi was there, which struck me as odd because Geordi's there. I'm like, all right, here's where the connection is going to come.
Something's going to happen. Geordi will heal Worf or something.
Right. And it's still nothing. So Captain Picard gets in the alien's butt. They come out of the ready room. And it is only then, only after seeing Worf die and get resurrected and they realizing all is up at stake. It's only at that time, which is we learn over a month after they found him on the planet. It was only at that exact time that Geordi says, hey, yo, thank you.
I'm feeling good.
I'm feeling good. You know this woman I've been betting for the last month? Mm-hmm. That's thanks to you.
Keep up the good work, alien.
If you got any more, let me know.
That's right.
You can sell it as a drink.
Yeah, it's I don't understand that storyline at all. It seems like there was something there. Someone had the kernel of an idea.
Yeah.
And then they were like, well, we only have 44 minutes, so we need to get rid of that. We need to tell the story of this alien and how he's transforming into an energy beam and being, and his race doesn't like it, and so he's on the run. And so forget about Geordi, because who cares about Geordi? Which is sad. But Geordi does get the girl at the end of it.
He does, and I'm very happy for him. Mm-hmm. God bless him.
She seemed very excited that Geordi wanted to go to the Arboretum with her, so... she says that didn't seem like something you'd want to do, and Geordi is very smoothly takes her arm, and he's like, there's a lot you don't know about me,
yes. And
off they go. Yes. And then there's a great scene where then Data and Worf are sitting, and they look at each other, and Worf says, I've been tutoring him, which I thought was very nice, and then, haha, the rest of the episode.
And you don't even see her anymore
nope,
on the show.
Never mentioned again. We do not know who she is. She never comes back.
Yeah, I know she's just Mrs. Henshaw because she doesn't wear Star Trek uniform, nope. So she's not Starfleet.
Or she could be on off duty, just hanging out. I don't know.
Well, then she's off. Like she's never in uniform. So I think she's like one of the civilian.
She could be
passengers.
Like maybe a bartender or 10 forward or something. I don't know. When Guinan isn't on, she's behind the bar.
I don't know.
We don't know. There's a lot of unanswered questions.
Not unanswered questions.
Hi, I'm not Random Trek's Scott McNulty. I'm Radio Theater's David J. Lohr, and I'm here to talk about sleep. I don't know about you. I like sleep. Sleep is a good thing. And when I want a good night's sleep, I want a good mattress. I want a Casper mattress. Time Magazine's with me. They named it one of the best inventions of 2015. That's right, invention. They didn't redesign the wheel. They obsessively re-engineered the mattress, and at a shockingly fair price. How does it work? Three words. Supportive memory foams. These create an award-winning sleep surface with just the right sink and just the right bounce. Best of all, it contours to your body to relieve pressure while retaining that bounce and a cool temperature. When it comes to mattresses, I like sinking, but I love bouncing. With over 20,000 reviews and an average of 4.8 stars, it's quickly become the internet's favorite mattress. Try Casper for 100 nights risk-free in your own home and see. If you don't love it, you're going to love it. Did I mention the bouncing? But if you don't love it, they'll pick it up and give you a full refund, no strings attached. Casper understands the importance of truly sleeping on a mattress before you commit, especially considering that you're going to spend a third of your life on it. They even have free shipping and returns to the US and Canada. That's pretty good. Hey, how about this? They'll give you $50 towards any mattress purchase when you visit www.casper.com/trek and use the offer code, yes, you guessed it, TREK. Terms and conditions apply, but you're used to podcast ads, you know that. Casper. The perfect mattress for humans, Vulcans, Andorians, Orions, heck, even that weird rock monster from the third season. And with that, live long and podcast. Beam me out, Scott.
Let's talk about what so Dr. Crusher is the other kind of main character along with this
yes.
alien.
Yes.
So let's talk about Dr. Crusher and this alien for a little bit.
Okay.
So Dr. Crusher saves him, mm-hmm. transports him up to sickbay, stabilizes him. She's feeling good about herself.
And she does name him. Didn't she name him John?
I forget what his name is, which is why I'm just calling him the alien.
Yeah, so was I. I think she called him John.
He probably does have a name. But he wakes up. John Doe, she calls him.
Right.
Because we don't know who he is. We can't read. There's another kind of... Not, I wouldn't even call it a subplot, but they get this kind of data container thing that they can't really
read. The equivalent to the black box from the ship.
Exactly. And then they figure, Geordi and Data figure out how to read it, and they figure out where his planet is, and so they go back to him. But he doesn't know who he is. He doesn't remember anything about his life.
Right.
He doesn't remember what species he is, but he can talk, which is interesting. So he remembers his language,
mm-hmm.
And he doesn't know why he was there. He knows nothing about himself.
Nothing. I know nothing.
Yes, but there's a weird thing that is puzzling Dr. Crusher. It seems that his cells are all regenerating.
Yes.
And Picard's like, well, perhaps this is just his healing process. And she says, well, it has nothing to do with his injuries. And Captain Picard's like, well, you're the doctor. And he leaves.
Let me know.
Yeah, that's right. I've got a ship to take care of. And then, so, throughout the course of the episode, he gets stronger. There's some rehabilitation. I question Dr. Crusher's rehabilitation strategies because she almost lets him fall down twice.
And pretty much.
Everybody else there, but okay. He gets strong. And then one of my other favorite characters comes in. Good old Chief O'Brien.
Oh, yes.
Who becomes a much bigger character in Deep Space Nine, but certainly... He is a character on TNG. He loves kayak, which we find out for the first time in this episode. He has dislocated his shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
This seems like an extraneous... Once again, why are we talking about O'Brien and his dislocated shoulder? But this is when we find out that John Doe is like Space Jesus. and he touches O'Brien's shoulder. No offense to Jesus lovers out there. And heals him instantly.
Very much so. And he just walks up to him. He's like,
you're healed. But he did it instinctually. He doesn't understand why he did that.
Right.
And so everybody is shocked, but not too shocked.
No, they seem pretty good with it.
Whatever. We'll you stay in sick bay. We'll take you on some tours, but we're not going to question this.
Yeah.
Because why not?
Hey.
It feels like you'd want to examine him or study why he's doing this, but they're just like, whatever, you can heal people. It's cool. And then so he starts turning. He can't control this energy, it seems like.
Yeah.
And so he's like, I got to get off the ship. I got to get off the ship because I'm going to kill everybody, is the implication. He doesn't actually say that. He runs to basically hijack a shuttlecraft.
Mm-hmm.
I do question how he knows how to use all the interfaces of the Enterprise.
So do I.
But
I peeped that too. I peeped that. He looked at it. He was just like, that looks like on.
That's right. I know how to open the doors in this.
How am I going to fly this ship that I don't know from this race that's not
can't
mine?
Read there. I don't know. But he doesn't get to that point though, because Worf stops him. But Worf's death stops him, really, because Worf gets flung off of a catwalk
by a light. I mean, look. You know, later on, you know, there's a whole lot of Klingons that laugh at Worf,
mm-hmm.
and then, you know, they scoff at Worf because of, like, his parentage and his heritage and
his
family.
He's not a real Klingon.
Not a real Klingon and everything like that. And you always feel for Worf. Like, no, he is a real Klingon. He's a Klingon. You know, yeah, he may have some human parents, but, you know, there's enough Klingon in him. He's full-fledged Klingon.
He's 100% pure-blooded Klingon.
Yeah. But that wasn't his most Klingon moment.
No, that was not a high moment.
When light made him fall over a balcony.
Very dramatically as well.
Yes.
So he falls off, and Dr. Crusher luckily is there, but it doesn't matter because Worf is dead.
They didn't seem like they were too much in a rush to get to him when he landed. Like he basically lands with a thud, and then there's like, can we move yet?
Yeah,
it's our cue. Let's go.
Yeah,
and they just saunter over to him.
And it doesn't seem like... So he's their friend. They've been together for several years. He's like one of Geordi's best friends, and Geordi is there. Dr. Crusher, you know, they have a nice relationship. I don't think it's ever been established that they're super close, but they have a working relationship. Nobody seems all that concerned.
Not at all. It's as if they read the script.
I know.
And they said
Worf is a main character. He can't die in this episode.
Get out of here. What's on page 20? Here it comes. Here comes John.
Yeah, so then John appears and heals, and not only heals Worf, because Worf's neck was broken, he breathes life back into him. He resurrects from the dead Worf. And this is when people think, something's odd about this, John. This is not normal. But they're bringing him back to his planet, his home planet.
Yeah.
And they are intercepted by some of his people. It turns out his people don't want him.
Yeah.
Well, they do want him.
They want him.
They want to kill him.
Yes.
Because he's turning into basically the next step of their species. Apparently, you go from weird forehead people to... energy blobs. That's the evolutionary steps.
Yes, pretty much. Yes, those are the steps on the evolutionary tree of these people.
And so they don't want to do that. They think he's making it up. They think he's crazy. Then Captain Picard, being very Captain Picard, he says, well, you know, I don't want to just give him up. I want to know what the charges are.
Right.
And there are some new details you may be unaware of. We respect your laws, but still we respect life. All very great Star Trek stuff.
Yeah.
Turns out that this is the moment at which he remembers everything, John Doe, and he manages to harness his powers. The aliens have some weird weapon that is never really explained that makes everyone on the Enterprise suffocate.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it got a vacuum gun.
Yes.
It just sucks
the air out. And everyone but Data and John Doe. John Doe heals everybody by touching the walls and emitting energy. And then you think, something's up with this guy. Even more. This is what he then can... He has apparently phenomenal powers now. He transports the captain of the other ship onto the board.
Mm-hmm.
They have a little chat.
Yes.
He is still not super convinced, and he does not want to bring John Doe back. But John Doe is like, you can't stop me, dude.
Yes.
Sends him back to the ship. The ship runs away. John Doe says, Dr. Crusher, you've been cool. I can never repay you.
Well, what you haven't mentioned is that by now, when he's there, mm-hmm. and he brings the guy from the other ship to his ship, it is at that point that John realizes, like, you know, you can't stop me because, right. you know, it's too late. Mm-hmm. Because at that time, he then fully transforms into a pure energy being.
Yes, which I thought, well, this is an interesting choice because generally when we see energy beings in Star Trek, they are shaped like blobs.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, he's shaped like a dude.
Yeah.
But then he turns, spoiler alert, he turns into a blob and you think, oh, all
right. Right, right.
Oh, well, we're back to blobs. Yes. So, and then we also find out that there were three others mm-hmm. and they escaped the planet because they wanted to see if they could. Apparently this process has been happening before, but
yeah.
they stop it.
They always stop it because they're scared of it.
They're scared of it, which is understandable. But these four people wanted to let it happen and see what would happen. Mm-hmm. Three of them died. This guy survived. And now he's basically, the transformation's happened. He tells the captain, not Captain Picard, but the alien captain, can't stop it. I'm going to go back to our planet and kind of show people what we have, what's been locked inside of us all along.
Right.
A la Geordi and his self-confidence. And the captain's not so happy about that. But everybody else on the Enterprise is like, hooray, we found a new alien life. And it was a privilege. Captain Picard has a little speech where he says it's a privilege to watch this next step in your evolution. It's what we do. This is kind of our bread and butter. So hooray. There's a nice moment with Dr. Crusher and the alien. And he touches her face. And he's like, you saved my life. I can never repay you.
I think she whimpers. I think she's like,
she does. And then I thought to myself, you can repay her. You're like an all-powerful energy being. You gave Geordi self-confidence. Why can't you give Dr. Crusher something?
Give her a little sum.
Exactly. A little tap on the head and she's suddenly a better dancer or something. I don't know. but he doesn't. And then he's basically like, peace out, Enterprise. Turns into a blob. And we are treated to a very familiar scene of the top of the saucer section with him coming out of it and flying off into space. Never to be spoken of again.
No. And let us not speak of this episode.
Exactly.
Again.
So what did you think of this episode overall?
I remember seeing it, you know, oh, so many years ago. And watching it now in the light of day.
Mm-hmm.
I really didn't like this episode.
That's okay.
It's because it is... The stories, like you say, they don't connect.
Mm-hmm.
They only tangentially connect. And like you made the connection about, you know, he released what was inside of him, just mm-hmm. like he released the confidence in Geordi.
Yes.
Okay, well, all right, well, there's that, I guess. But
it's not super great, but I think that's what they were going for.
But there were so many things that just didn't make any sense to me. Like, mm-hmm. you know, Worf says more talk, less talk, more Cinta Hall. Mm-hmm. Worf don't like Cinta Hall.
He wants prune juice.
That did not ring true. But I think what really stuck out to me is how the slowness of the scenes,
mm-hmm.
the very stagey mm-hmm. way everything is directed, at one point I started counting how many times Picard and Riker were like pulling at their tunics, you know, at the end of every scene and, you know, mm-hmm. pins in their lips, you know. It is only when they got to the scene where after they're first confronted by the other people, it's like, yo, give us back our alien.
Start happening.
He's like, no, I don't want to. And it's only then that it starts popping, mm-hmm. Even that didn't make any sense. Give us back our alien. No. You know what? I'm going to give you 2 hours.
Right. No, don't make me ask again, but I will ask again in 2 hours.
In 2 hours. Right after this movie. Yeah, I mean, like, where's 2 hours come from? Like, who comes up with 2 hours?
It seems like a lot of time. You'd be like 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Get stuff together.
You know what I mean?
I'll call you back.
Like, we're right outside.
That's right. We're not going anywhere.
2 hours. It's not like he's got bags, you know?
No, that's right. He doesn't have anything.
He doesn't have anything. It's just, you know. But it's only after that. And they go into the ready room and there's a conversation there. Mm-hmm. And the conversation is about the Enterprise's, you know, misgivings about handing this guy over, and Picard actually saying, like, you know, at the end of the day, I can't, who am I to say about their laws?
Right. I can't judge their culture. We have to follow their laws. I don't know this guy's story. You know, what are we doing?
He ain't helping me because he don't know.
He doesn't know. So who can I trust?
You know what I mean? So it was only then that it really starts to pop a little bit. Like, that conversation really started to pop.
Yes.
And I appreciated that, because it was just very, very slow going in the beginning. Sure. And it was evocative of, you know, some of the worst things of the first two seasons, some of the worst things of the original Trek, which made me think, it made me want to look, was Gene Roddenberry alive when this one was done?
And like, I don't know.
Boom. Well, at the end, it says executive producer, Gene Roddenberry.
So, yeah.
Now, maybe he passed away and he would, you know, just given up. Because I think the third season is the last season that he's involved in.
I think that's right.
So, so maybe he had passed away by then, and that's just an honorarium. I don't know. But it played very much like a Gene Roddenberry thing.
Yes.
Where they were all about the exploration of this situation. Right. But the situation, at the end of the day, didn't add up to much of anything.
Yes. There are a lot of scenes of John and Dr. Crusher talking to each other.
Yeah.
And he's slowly figuring out who he is.
And then there's a really weird scene, because you mentioned about Crusher being in here. And, and Crusher has a kind of like a cute scene. He comes down into the see the guy, or basically see his mom,
yep,
where she works, which I also liked that this was the first time you really got the appreciation that sick bay is not just a room.
Right. Yes, there are extra rooms.
Yes, sick bay is a bay of the hospital. Yeah. So I have to say, I did appreciate that. But Crusher goes down there to see his mom and has like a cute little moment with the guy, with the alien John.
Yep.
And then there's a very weird and disturbing scene with Crusher and his mom at dinner.
Disturbing? They're just having dinner together.
Yeah, but his mom's talking to him about being attracted to some
guy. Well, that's true. But he brought it up. He was like,
okay, yeah, but as a mom,
it is a little weird.
There's not a conversation you're going deep into.
And they spend a lot of time talking about it.
Really? I mean, I'm like,
But now
you can see, like, oh, now I get it. Y'all just had to fill it, you know.
Yes.
Yeah, y'all did what y'all had to do.
Yeah.
Y'all had a quota. It's all good.
You need to fill the season. Really.
Exactly.
And this is certainly not the worst TNG episode.
Mm-mm.
It has good moments. I totally agree with you, though. I feel like if they had moved up the confrontation with the other aliens into maybe the second act instead of way later in the episode, it would have built up some more tension. And then John, in those 2 hours, it could have been, let's track these 2 hours.
Yeah.
And John Doe suddenly is healing people and remembering stuff and trying to get off the ship. And
right.
It could have just compacted it. But in fact, it was like over a month. So it's less impactful, I think. Len, thank you so much for joining me and talking about this episode of Star Trek.
Oh, man, it's over.
It's over. We're done.
Oh, my God.
We've done our duty. You can now transform back into an energy blob and float out of my window.